told her, I said, let's see if I can hug you without falling. Oh, it is so good to be here. Thank you, everybody, for inviting us. I am a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon. My name is Catherine. And Lee's going to take care of business here to make sure that everything is working properly. Thank you both for Jason and Megan for your talks. I went to my sponsor's room after this morning's meeting, and I said, I think I need to have a prison story. And she looked at me and she says, you don't have a prison story. And I said, of course I do. And so my prison story is that I worked with an architectural firm that designed prisons and jails, and I got to see it before you got to see it. So there's my prison story. Oh, gosh. I am so very grateful to be here. My husband is here today, so thank you, Bob, for coming. And my sponsor is here with me. And then all my peeps, we call each other peeps, from Atlanta. We had a bunch of people come down from Atlanta. And one lady flew in from Virginia to drive my sponsor with another one of my Al-Anon sisters to come to Hilton Head. And so that's support of recovery. And yeah, where else could I find that? Where else could I find that? There's been so much shared so far this weekend, and you know, I've been in here a while. My recovery date is June 5th, 1984, and there's been a tremendous amount of change in my life. And you know, my sponsor always challenges me, and this year she said, I want your story to have something different, something more current, but I need to share some of what it was for me when I got here, but I'm not going to share a lot of the mess. I'm going to share the recovery, not the mess. Share the message, not the mess. Is that what you told me? And but I've really, there's the spiritual journey. When I walked into the rooms of Al-Anon, I saw those steps on the wall, and I thought, there is no way I'm going to pay attention to any of this stuff that talks about G-O-D. There's no way that you're going to pull the wool over my eyes that higher power does not mean G-O-D. And so I've been reading one of my favorite books. You know, I'm very blessed that I was introduced to the AA Big Book, that I was introduced to the AA Open AA meetings so that I could hear about the disease of alcoholism. I'm very grateful for that. I love the Al-Anon literature. My favorite piece of Al-Anon literature is How Al-Anon Works. We have another workbook that is Reaching for Personal Freedom. I love it. I love it. I love it. And the pamphlets, Val, where are you? The calibration is about the Cal literature. When we first got into recovery, man, we were broke. The only phone calls we ever got were bill collectors. And so I'd go into those meetings, and you have the free pamphlets. And so I'd take every one that I could take, and I'd bring it home. And I thought that I would read everything, and I couldn't retain anything. But what did happen for me is that at 2 o'clock in the morning, when the mind is whirling and I'm wondering, why am I still here? Why am I still with this man? I would go into the closet and I would sit down on the floor and I'd read a piece of literature. Now, I had no idea what it said after I finished it, but I broke the cycle. I broke the cycle of insanity just by doing that. And being introduced to these programs, you gave me an alternate solution. You gave me something that I could do instead of the same old, same old. Because I grew up in this thing, married into it, divorced out of it, and went right out and found another guy. And we went on our ride. You know, I like to joke that Bob and I, we were that tornado whirling through the lives of others. When we got together, we were that tornado. And we affected our children, we affected ex-spouses, we affected our family members, we affected sisters, brothers, everybody in our path was affected by what we did. He was married when we met. We met in May. We were married in July, and there was a divorce that happened in there. And I carried that guilt and shame with me well into recovery for a long time. And once I started developing that possibility that something greater than alcoholism could be present in my life, once I started developing that, then I was able to start giving it over and giving it to that higher power that I found in here. And I was able to let go of that shame and guilt and remorse, and I was able to then use that past as my greatest asset. Is it something I would like to do again? No, I do not. But it is what brought us to recovery. I will start on the last drunk, and hopefully that will be it, and we'll get right into recovery from there. But when we got married, I had a daughter from the first marriage, and he had two sons from his first marriage. And those kids were profoundly affected by the disease. They were profoundly affected by what was going on in our house. And that last drunk, you know, one of the things that I did, and I hear everybody talking about this weekend, my solution was, I'll just move. Whatever's going on here, I will just move and it will be better. Next time it will be better, it will be different. We will be different, but we took us with us. And so we'd done this for 6 years. We lived in the active disease for 6 years. I got the best part. But what happened is that last drunk, Bob was a violent drunk. He was a loud drunk. He liked to break things. He liked to play with guns. And so what I would do is what I learned how to do as a child living in the disease. I did not live in violence, but I lived in an inappropriate behavior from a parent. And so I did that thing of, if I just get through this moment, if I just get through this moment, tomorrow it will be different. And so that's what we did for 6 years. And then what I did is that once he was not under the influence of alcohol, I would leave the busted pots, I would leave the holes in the wall, I would do all that stuff, and I'd just leave it so he could see it. So won't you be sorry? And then I would play the guilt card, and I would go spend money we didn't have because you owed me. And so I came into this program with that belief system that you owed me. And I was just holding my card. I was just waiting to play that card. And I was so very, very grateful that last time we moved, we were moving right in between a treatment center and the NABA Club in Atlanta. God just plopped us right down in the middle of those two places. His last drunk, he was the yet. Bob was the yet. Never been arrested. He lost jobs because of his mouth, not because of his drinking. And so he changed jobs a lot. But we didn't have the yets. And that last drunk, you know, that was the first time I left because I didn't think I could leave. I thought I had to stay there and keep it quiet. And I left that night, and what I know today is I got out of God's way. I left that night and got out of God's way. He tried to burn down our new house. The neighbors called the fire, you know, the police. The police called the fire department. So we've got all these red lights going on around our house. And when I got back, which is so important for me to share, is that I had isolated myself so much in this disease that I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go but back to that house where I knew what to expect. I was more afraid of the unknown than I was afraid of the known. And so I came back, and we got all these red lights, blue lights, whatever they were, going, and there's the fire truck there, there's a helicopter there, the whole neighborhood's in my front yard, and I think I'm keeping it secret. I think nobody knows what's going on in my house. And so this is my, and I tell this every time because it's so funny now. There was a lady standing out in the yard, and when I got out of the car, she just put her arm around me, and she says, "Honey, welcome to the neighborhood." And so I couldn't keep it secret anymore. It just, I thought I was controlling the uncontrollable. I thought I was trying to control his drink. All of the things that we do, you know, the plotting, the manipulating, the covering up, the telling lies, the paying the bills, trying to get another job so that the bill collectors won't call, all of that. And it just became so unmanageable for me that I could not do it and I could not keep it a secret anymore. And today I know for us that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. Because had that night not happened, I doubt very much that either one of us would be alive. Because what Bob did is he played with the guns. He had the guns and he'd pull them out and, you know, and he'd threaten me, and if I can't have you, nobody can have you, and, you know, on and on and on. And I just sit there and I'd say, "Please God, let this go, let this get over with, and tomorrow it'll be different." And it was taken out of my hands that night. It was taken out of our hands that night. And he went to jail. we're back to the jail thing. And I had this illusion that he got one phone call. I didn't know that he could call collect and keep calling collect. And I didn't know that I didn't have to accept the collect call. So I can remember telling his mother, I thought they got just one call. Why is he calling so much? And so her response to me was, you need to figure this out because I've got my own. I don't want him back. And that was my support group at that time. So we got him out of jail, we finished moving, and then he went into treatment. He went into the Peachtree Parkwood facility over there near NABA. It's condos now because that was more necessary than alcohol rehabilitation, I think. But I was introduced to the Al-Anon program in that treatment center. There were two ladies that would come every week, and they would come and share the hope of Al-Anon. And I didn't know what was going on. I just knew I was in a room with like 30 other people that were just like me. They were angry. They were frustrated. They wanted out. They couldn't get out. They wanted payback. They couldn't get payback. And on and on and on. And we'd go around the room and try and one-up each other. We'd try and one-up each other on how bad it was at our house. And this voice of Al-Anon, this one voice of Al-Anon said, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. I don't know why I heard it. I heard it. And so she was there every week. Bob was in there for a month, 30 day. You were in a 30-day program. She was there for a month, and I went to that meeting, and I heard her voice. And then she told me something that changed my life. You had to write something about what was so important to us. I understand, and I care. She says, I understand and I care, and get to meetings outside of this hospital. Get to meetings in the community where there's some recovery. I had no idea what that meant. I just knew that I heard a voice, she understood, and she cared that maybe I could get some help. So I started going to these meetings, and it's a beautiful facility. It's a AA clubhouse, I guess is what it is. And they had Al-Anon in one room, the AA's in another room, a thin wall between the two meetings. And I would be in my room listening to see if I could hear him. And I would do that. And you could hear his voice. He's loud. He was loud. And you could hear his voice, and I'd go like this. And I'd think, oh, my God, they're going to know he belongs to me. He doesn't belong to me. But that's where I started. And then the women in that room, and it was a lot of gray-haired women, and that's me today. I'm a gray-haired woman. But I stuck around long enough, and I earned every gray hair that I have. But they would tell me, get your mind with your body. Get in this room. Get here. This is where your recovery is. And in Al-Anon, there was a saying that I took home with me at night, because even in sobriety, even early sobriety, it was not fun. It was not fun. And so it'd be, keep your mind with your body. They tell me, keep your mind with your body. We had a great workshop this morning on the merry-go-round called denial, and they would tell me, somebody's got to get off the merry-go-round for anything to change. So get off the merry-go-round. And they tell me about the hope. And the hope wasn't that he get and stay sober. You know, he hadn't had a drink, but he was still suffering from the disease of alcoholism, the anger, you know, everything that goes along with it. And so we lived that for several years in recovery. But the hope was my hope. The hope was that I would be okay, whether he was okay or not. And I got to bring that with me later on with my daughter, and I'll share some of that with you in a little bit. But I got to listen to these people that had been coming and attending meetings, and they were laughing. They were laughing at these things that were going on in my house. And so it didn't have the stigma. It didn't have the power that it had for so long, because I was so ashamed, and I thought nobody knew, but everybody knew but me. Everybody knew but me. So I got to hear this, I got to listen to these people, and the AA community welcomed me. They welcomed me, the family member. And you let me sit in your open meetings and hear somebody else share the story that my husband lived. Got to share what was going on inside of him. And I got to see, I can remember, someone picked up, it was birthday night, and they picked up a 90-day chip. And I looked at Bob and I said, he's lying. There's no way he can be sober 90 days. But that was powerful for me. And of course, being the untreated person that I was, my disease was not the obsession with the drink. My disease was the obsession with somebody else. And I was always ready to not only move, but I would want to move relationships. And so I was checking you guys out. And so the ones that I was really attracted to, you had like maybe 3 days. And so I started working with the lady that I'm working with now. And from the beginning, men work with men, women work with women, men work with men, women work with women. But we got to build that community. And I talked about, you know, our children were profoundly affected by alcoholism. Our daughter has been profoundly affected by recovery. She's had her own path, and we'll talk about that. But today I got to call her just a little bit before my talk. And she's house-sitting for us today. She's taking care of our dog. And we trust her in our house today. And I know that she's going to take care of business. And I got to tell her, I love you, and we're going to share our miracle. Several years ago, I had been talking about our relationship. And it finally dawned on me, one of the things that we talk in Al-Anon about is protecting the anonymity of the AA member. She's not in AA, but why would I also want to go and share all of that stuff about her? Understanding that if I don't share it, I'm going to get sick, and someone that needs to hear it may not get better. And so I went to her and I said, I do talk about your path and our path. And she says, Mom, it's okay. She says, Mom, that's our miracle. That's our miracle story. So ever since then, right before I speak, if my sponsor's not with me, I call her first, then I call Bob. And then I call my daughter. And I've done that for a lot of years. And it's just to get connected and to know that this is not a given. This program is not a given. It's a get-to. And I heard someone talk about that this morning. When I started changing my focus, when I started believing that once I walked through the doors of Al-Anon, my life became a get-to, not a have-to. The changed perspective. I've been on this kick about possibilities, the whole possibilities, and I'm finding it throughout our literature, I'm finding it in the big book, I'm finding the fact of the possibility that there's something greater than alcoholism, that there is a power that can come into my life that I can access that is greater than the chaos that is going on in my home. And when I take that pause and I focus on that power and I ask for guidance and direction, then I usually get it. I don't know what it's going to be, but there's a power in the pause. Today, I call it the God pause. In the very beginning, I couldn't do the God thing because I knew I was being punished, and this marriage was my punishment. And, you know, I was thinking before we started, I was going through, you know, I always like to make sure that my house is clean before I come up and share my story so I'm not carrying resentments. But my prayer started as a child, please let this get over with. And then my mother had gotten really ill when I was little, and then it had changed to, please don't let her die on me today. And then as I grew and her illness became an inconvenience to me, my prayer became, please take her if you're going to take her now. Take her. And so that, with the behaviors of acting and reacting to alcoholism, by the time I got to these rooms, I knew that I wasn't good enough to be in the presence of any kind of a higher power. Alcoholism was my higher power. And I learned in here that I could find a healthy, loving higher power that I could ask to come into my life and help guide me. And so that's what I've been working on, and I get to keep reading, and I get to keep seeing new things. We do this, How Al-Anon Works. My home group is Way of Hope, AFG, on Saturday morning at 10 a.m., and I guess we've been 9 years, 9 or 10 years now, that group. And we go through the book every year. It may take a little more than a year, but we'll finish the book, and then we start over. And every time we read through it, there's something new that I see. And the something new, you know, there's something, I'm not going to leaf through pages right now, but it's talking about every time I do this step, there will be a new awakening for me. There will be something different that comes into my life that I had no idea was even possible. all I knew is that I had to uncover that, you know, Chuck Chamberlain used to talk about discover, uncover, and discard. I just knew there was so much that I had to discard. I had to uncover it and get rid of it, uncover it and get rid of it, uncover, get rid of it. And now what I get to do is I get to really sit there and sit with the God that I found in this program and think about how am I going to be able to expand my spiritual program today? And so I spend that time in the morning, except this weekend, my sponsor sends me a little morning message every morning on the text. And so she says, "Did you read my message?" And I said, "No, I've been too busy." And I know better than that. I know better than that. But that's one way that we have gotten to keep in contact through this whole period that we're coming out of now, is that sending morning positive messages to each other, staying in contact, getting on Zoom calls, then going back into in-person meetings. And this is fabulous. This is the first big conference I've been to. I've been to like 200 or 300 people, but this is the first big conference I've been to since 2019. And it's wonderful. There's a power. There's such a power when we're in here laughing and sharing the travels that we've taken and showing that the miracle that we are, that this is where we were and this is where I am today, and that there gets to be more. There's more out there that I have no idea about. None. No idea. Bob and I, we were in recovery for about 4 years. We like to move. We always, it'll be better. It'll be better. And so he had an opportunity with a company that he worked with to go over to Germany. And we ended up in Nuremberg, Germany. And we were 4 years in the program. Still, we weren't sure we liked each other. We still weren't sure. And I can remember sitting in my meeting saying, "I don't know, if I get over there, what happens if I have to come back?" And somebody jokingly said, "Take your American Express. Don't leave home without it." And so just laughing at some of the realities of the feelings that we had. And what we found over there was not isolation. We found AA. And we found Al-Anon. And my very first day, Bob went ahead of me and he found AA. And my very first day there, we went to visit a couple that had welcomed him into their home. And I was met at the door by this beautiful lady that had this huge bouquet of flowers. And she said, "Welcome to Al-Anon in Germany." And so it was different. It was different. And I always want to thank the speaker, the people that record the tapes, because she liked the English-speaking meetings. She was a German native. She liked the English-speaking meetings, and there was one a week. There was just one a week, and it was on a military base. And so she listened to speaker tapes, and she got her recovery. She was a year behind me when I got there, in number of years of recovery. And she had gotten her recovery from the book, from the One Day at a Time, and from the speaker tapes. And God's miracle is at that time, the woman that sponsors me today had relocated from California, and we didn't do it right. We didn't do the meetings right. Every time we were in a meeting, we'd hear that. "You're not doing it right." And so I took what I learned from her, and I took it to Germany. And so there was another lady that got to sponsor her locally in Atlanta before I left, and she said, "You go to those meetings and you keep your mouth shut." She said, "You need them more than they need you right now. You go and you listen to Al-Anon, and you listen to how they do it in Germany." And so I did that. And then I was able to realized that I had been going to a meeting every day, and they had one meeting a week. And so I found out that there was, in fact, another meeting that was happening that only two people had been supporting for over a year. And so I told, this other lady that I want to go to that meeting. And she had an opinion about it. And I said, "I don't care. I want to go." And so I started building my support network, and I started building my meetings. And I got to bring Atlanta Al-Anon to Nuremberg, Germany. And I got to share with them the hope that I will be okay whether the alcoholic is drinking or not. That's the hope. It's not he's going to get sober. And you know, I read some of the earlier stories where they said, and she went to Al-Anon and he got sober. And there's no promise in that, because it doesn't always happen. My daughter, we got married, and like I said, we created so much chaos in everybody's life. And when I left, I grew up in Miami, and when we left Miami, I did not tell her birth father where we were going. And so he found her when we got to Atlanta, and he kidnapped her from school. And I didn't get to see that child for 7 more years. And what I got to realize later on, as I continued to work my steps, is that in that moment of chaos, in that moment when I knew that he had her, two things. I had a choice to leave Miami without telling him or telling him, and I chose not to tell him. When we found her, I made a choice to not go get her, because I didn't want her living in what we were living in. And I felt it would be better for her if she stayed with her father. And of course, I was attracted to alcoholics, and that family was covered up in the disease. And so she had a whole different set of challenges than she would have had with us. 7 years later, you know, she came back into our life, and she was in her teens by then, and so she was well on her own path. And so this is my... Bob and I worked it out, because he's in recovery. You know, we talked the same language. We were able to, I'm going to call my sponsor, and he'd say, what have I done now? And I'd say, it's not about you. I'm going to call my sponsor. I'm going to go be with my sponsor. My daughter came into our life, and I was going to force her to go to Alateen. I said, if you're going to come live with us, you're going to go to Alateen. And so she'd walk in the front door, walk out the back door. Walk in the front, walk out the back. And so what I learned is that I don't have to change her. She was well on her path. She was that young lady that ended up in the strip bar. And she was that young lady that ended up on the poles. And I got to love her. I got to love her for where she was at. Because we talk about being self-supporting in here. And for her, that was self-supporting. You know, we offered to take her to treatment, and that was not her choice. She did not want to go to treatment, and so she would run away. You know, she'd live with us for a while, and then she'd run away, and she'd live and run away. And every time she'd run away, she'd want to come back. That was what we did, and that's what we did. And I did that. We did that till she was 19, I guess, 18 or 19. And finally, you know, Bob and I were in conflict, because he knew what she was. He knew exactly what was going on. And I was going to make it okay. I was going to do for her everything I did for him. And I told my sponsor that. And she looked at me and she said, you almost died for him. Are you going to do that for her? Are you going to become the mother that she needs, not the friend that you want? And I thought, oh, my God. And so I started learning how to say no. I started learning that whole process of saying no and meaning what you say and saying what you mean. And then in the chaotic moment, can I follow through? I learned not to make threats. Don't make threats if you're not going to follow through on it. So we got to walk that path. And for years, she could be gone for 4 months or 5 months, and I wouldn't hear from her. And so my disease takes me to the worst-case scenario. And she'd call, and I'd start that thing of, don't you know what you're doing with your life? Come home, let me get you in treatment. And then I wouldn't hear from her. And so I shared that in a meeting one night, and somebody said, why don't you just tell her, thank you for letting me know you're alive, and I love you. And so we did that. And so every time we'd have that conversation, it might be 2 months before I'd hear from her, or it might be a month. And then we've started building that relationship. And as a parent, you hurt when your kid hurts, period. You're going to hurt when your kid hurts. And that shame and guilt can rear its ugly head at any moment. But I have the tools today that I can do the best thing for all of us, not that quick fix to make me feel okay. Not that quick fix to make her feel okay when it's something she has to do. Two times, you know, the whole spiritual awakening, the whole getting out of God's way, the whole detachment, The first time I experienced it, when I really got it, I was going to meetings for him, not me, and I came home from work, and he's in the living room with the gun in his lap, and he says, I can't stay sober, but I know I can't drink again. And that was the first night that I truly got out of God's way, and I said, I can't fix this for you. I can't do this. I'm going to NABA. I'm going to a meeting. I love you, but I'm leaving. And so by me doing that, I got out of God's way, and he went to the NABA club himself, and he stayed with the guys downstairs. You know, it was an upstairs for the meetings and downstairs for the fellowship. And so one of the men took him to a midnight meeting. There was a midnight meeting at the Biscayne Club, I think it was. And he went there and had his spiritual awakening. And what I understand today is that had I tried to stop that process one more time, had I interfered one more time, that would have delayed that process. And so as hard as it was for me, not knowing what I was going to come back to, I did that, and I claimed my chair in Al-Anon. I came for me that night, and I've been coming ever since. My daughter, the same thing. She's still suffering. She still has good days, and she still has bad days. She has benefited from our recovery. I work with her husband now. God love us, that's recovery. I get to work with him part-time. I retired from full-time work and work with him part-time. So I get to work out of their house. And I don't have to get in there and manipulate and manage. I can go in, I can be his employee, and when I go out of the office, I can sit and talk to my daughter. And when she's, sometimes she's just wound tighter than a drum, and she's just going up and up and up, and I can listen, because nobody ever listened to her. I can listen, and then I can tell her, you know what, time out. I'm saturated now. Enough. Time out. But I want you to know that I want to hear what you have to say. And so I'm learning how to function in our relationships where I can take care of me, not take care of the people around me, but hear them. Because for so long, I just closed it all out because I thought I knew better. I thought I knew better. And so I can listen to her. And she's doing really well today. She's doing today. Last year, it had been a long, long time that I had worried that she wouldn't make it. And last year, that came back, that fear came back, because she was physically ill, and whatever was going on with her medication, she was just... And she kept losing weight and kept losing weight, and she was like 90 pounds. And I finally told my sponsor, I said, I'm worried. I'm worried that she's going to die. And it had been many, many years since I had felt that. And my sponsor, who has lost a child to this disease, was able to listen to me and tell me that she's here today and focus on today. And your job is to let her know you love her no matter what. No matter what. And I didn't get that in the beginning. I thought I had to fix it. The walk that we've been walking these past few years is about love and service. How can I love unconditionally, and how can I get out of myself? How can I get out of myself when that fear takes over? And so it's service. It's being of help to someone else. It's being of help to a newcomer. That awakening, that I don't have to fix them. I can just love them. And I didn't get that. There was a lady early in my recovery that I had asked to sponsor me, and she would tell me when our daughter was on the road, I like to say she was on the road again, when she was on the road, she said, just love her. And I thought, no, I can't just love her. I have to do something. What can I do? I have to fix it. I have to do something. I can't just love her. And so at that point, I couldn't. I didn't understand it. Today, I have a better understanding of it. Today, I love myself. Because of the steps of this program, I was able to clean house, do that fourth step, do that fifth step, work the amend steps that I needed to work. And with her, it's to be present, but not to fix her. With my husband, it's to love him where he's at and not to fix him. But I get to witness his recovery every day. I get to witness how he works with newcomers and long-timers in the meeting. And we get to share our home. You know, my sponsor took, both she and her husband took us through the traditions of this program, another awakening, another spiritual awakening. How do we apply it at home? When we looked at the primary purpose, what is our primary purpose of our home? It was for it to be a safe environment that served God. So when people come to our house today, it's a safe environment. Al-Anons that are living in the act of disease can come and not feel threatened because of inappropriate behavior. They cannot feel threatened because of anger and rage. They can come in and they can feel safe. There's a lady here that Bob was loving on yesterday, and you know, she's like a daughter. She's just like a daughter to us. And that was something that I learned in here, is that there's so much damage in this disease that I couldn't fix the primary relationships in the beginning. But God replaces. I found in here that people were brought into my life that could help me heal in those areas so that I could then go and heal those relationships. And it couldn't happen overnight. I had to be able to love you because you understood my language, the women in Al-Anon. I got to be able to look at you and work with you and love on you so that I could go and love on them. And I can accept you unconditionally. Why couldn't I do it with my husband and my daughter? So why did it have to have a price tag? I got to learn in here about loving for fun and for free. If I do something, I'm going to do it for fun and for free, no price tag. You know, when God, that whole thing of, if I do this, then you need to do this, and if you don't do this, then I'm going to have a resentment. And that was just eating away at my soul. And so when I do something, I either get to say no, not now, or I get to say, I'm happy to do it, I would love to do it, with no expectation of return. So these are things I had no concept of. You grow up in this thing and you're just, you know, someone talked earlier about the survival thing. I don't have to survive anymore. I don't have to live in survival mode anymore. I get to live in recovery. I get to live in the expectation that something stronger than alcoholism is out there, just waiting for me to tap into that power. And I get to do that every day. Does it mean that I don't ever have bad days? No. The fear can still take over. But I have tools today. I have tools that can help me walk through the fear. I have an awareness that whatever that power is that's out there, I have such a limited understanding of it. Just look around this room. Listen to the stories we've heard so far. How on earth could these people still be alive and happy and laughing and sharing the hope for the alcoholics and the hope for the family members without it being something, a power greater than alcoholism? I just, every time I come to these and I listen to stories, the miracle happens. You start, you know, you start in, at the worst point in your life, and you end up, and this is what can happen. And it's an hour, so it's not like the whole story. You know, it's not like your whole life. But it's the magic that happens when we get to share what this program did. We were sharing with someone the other day that the first conferences we went to, we were very fortunate that we would get to go to the cabins or to the rooms of some of the long-timers after we did this. And we get to hear the stories, and we get to hear them talk about, you know, and of course they do the drunkalogs, you know, they have that because that's part of it. But they get to share the people that were around them and the people that made an impact on their lives. And I got to listen to these longtime members of AA talk about, he was not hopeless. Talk about, just because he had a disease, he was not hopeless. And then I got to hear the long-timers in Al-Anon tell me I was not hopeless. And then the reality, they would, you know, because I started parroting that for a while. It's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And then somebody told me, she says, Catherine, people die out here from this disease. They die out here from this disease. But you don't have to die. You don't have to. My thing was, take my life. You know, you're going to die or I'm going to die. One of them's going to die. And so that was my thing. Or just that whole thing of where we internalize and everything goes inside and I have no idea what's going on around me. Nothing. I don't have to live that way today. I'm one of the things that my sponsor has us do every year, and I get to pass that on to the people I sponsor, is at the very beginning of the year, we recommit to the steps. We recommit to a particular thing that I really would like God to help me remove. And I've really gotten in touch that I know how to love. I know how to love unconditionally, but I still have a wall. I still have a wall around me because I don't want to be hurt. And that wall is with my daughter and with my husband. And I can love them, and I can love them, but I haven't loved them fully. And so what my goal is this year is to learn how to love fully. Still take care of myself, because the reality is, he's one drink away from a drunk. I know he's got a strong program, but my reality is I'm married to an alcoholic. And so how can I love him fully with that understanding that I get to take care of myself within the disease? Something in the big book that really, really, really affected me is that part where it says, no human power on earth can relieve another person of their alcoholism. That was me. I was in there trying to fix it. I was in there trying to control it. And I sat in that room and I heard that read when I was in that open AA meeting. And every time it's read, I remember that that's me. I can't do it for them. He's got to find his connection. He's got to find his God. He's got to find that power greater than alcoholism. And I get to get out of the way. And I get to feel the love and compassion that I didn't have for so long. And so it's really special that he's here tonight. And I have no idea how much time I have left. We're getting close. But thank you. Thank you all for being here. And thank you for sharing from your soul. You know, and it's funny, and I'm not a funny speaker. I try to be, but it's just not me. I'm not a funny speaker. But you share from your soul, and it's the laughter. It's the laughter that gets that lets the healing come in. I'd sit in those rooms. I'd sit in there around the table, and I would sit in the back of the room because I didn't want to share. I'd stop talking in the disease. I worked full-time, but I never talked. And if I did talk, you couldn't hear me. And so finally someone said, get up to the table. Step up to recovery. Get up where the winners are. And I hated that. I did not like that term. But it's the people that made a commitment to their life. And I got to go in those birthday meetings. And I got to see people making a commitment to their life. And then reaching out and sharing with me. I will read something out of our Al-Anon book. But I want to share about this longtime member of AA, who was so instrumental in our recovery. He would stand at the door, the greeter. You were talking about the greeters. He would stand at the door. And he'd say, he'd hold my hand, and he'd say, if nobody's told you today they love you, let me be the first. And then he'd look Bob in the eye and hold his hand, and he'd say, if nobody's told you today they love you, let me be the first. That was so powerful, because nobody loved us because of the chaos and the anger and the wreckage that was going through our lives. But he knew. And in our Al-Anon literature, that one phrase, I understand and I care. That is so powerful. So if there's a newcomer in here tonight, come talk to us. We understand. We know what you're living in. And the hope is that you will be okay. You will be okay. I just want to read one thing, and then I'm going to turn it over. I love turning things over. I didn't even get into the amends. There were so many amends that were made, and the indirect amends, and I get to make it through people, and you know, just all of that. But I know we're short on time. So let me, reading through my literature, where is it? 44. Reading through this literature again, I had not seen this. I have been going through this book for probably 8 or 9 years, and I saw it for the first time a few weeks ago. And it's this paragraph. It says, we have embarked upon an extraordinary, potentially life-changing spiritual journey. The journey of recovery from the effects of alcoholism. Every step we take on this journey moves us toward becoming more fully the men and women we are capable of being. But we needn't wander aimlessly, struggling on our own without direction to find our way. Al-Anon's 12 steps show us the way. Through the steps, we can fill that empty place within us where loneliness and pain reside. We come alive in a way we never experienced before. We realize that we belong and we are loved. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Such vulnerability. Love it. The Al-Anon closing. Shall we say the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And our declaration for Al-Anon. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen always be there. Let it begin with me. Thank you, everyone.